NBC News Radio, I'm Scott Walterman. Cold weather coming to the upper Midwest and Northeast. NBC meteorologist Dylan Dreyer says Chicago should feel it first.
It's really cold in the morning. Tomorrow we're only topping out around 45 degrees after starting off at 27 tomorrow morning.
Off the coast of Mexico, Tropical Storm Raymond could bring heavy rain and flooding. It could become a hurricane in the next 48 hours. President Obama will be talking about the rollout of healthcare.gov tomorrow. He told staff last week they have to own up to the poor startup of the healthcare program. This morning on Meet the Press, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew said,
I think that there's no one more frustrated than the president at the difficulty in the website.
The World Series is all set. The Boston Red Sox will face off against the St. Louis Cardinals. First game is set for Wednesday at Fenway. This is NBC News Radio. Two murderers serving life sentences in Florida back in custody this morning. NBC's Sarah Daloff is in Orlando.
Life on the run came to an end for Charles Walker and Joseph Jenkins Saturday evening at the modest Coconut Grove Motel in Panama City Beach. Task force members ordered guests to stay inside and commanded the occupants of room 227 to come out.
They did so. No shots were fired. A number of weddings have been thrown together for tonight at midnight, New Jersey. Friday, the state Supreme Court lifted a ban on same-sex marriage. And the federal government shutdown may have damaged Washington politicians, but it was good business for cable television news. CNN, Fox, and MSNBC all saw their viewership increase, peaking at more than 5 million on Wednesday evening when Congress passed the bill to turn everything back on. I'm Scott Walterman, NBC News Radio.
Tuesday. The Car Chasers are back on CNBC Prime.
Cash talks, everything else walks.
They find, fix, and flip cars with passion.
I got skills that'll pay the bills.
Putting their own money on the line and revving up the big bucks.
I got a deal for you.
I'm all ears.
The Car Chasers, Tuesday, 10 Eastern. CNBC at Night is the new CNBC Prime.
Booyah! In the bag, baby.
When business is a gamble, it's all about the hustle.
Psst, it's me, your bathroom medicine cabinet. I see you naked, know how often you floss, and watch you pluck unsightly hairs. I can keep a secret, but you need to know. Your kids have been taking your prescriptions to get high. I couldn't keep it quiet, because prescription drug abuse now causes more deaths than cocaine and heroin ODs combined. So please, mind your meds. For tips on safeguarding your meds and your family, visit the partnership at drugfree.org.
Hi, everybody. Jim Howell from the KFX Weather Center. Working our way through a picture-perfect October weekend. Daytime highs mid-80s. Overnight lows upper 50s here in town, upper 40s in our cooler valley spots. And we stay mid-80s the first of the week. Jim Howell, Independent Talk 1100 KFX.
Currently, in downtown Phoenix, it's 60 degrees.
Yeah, we got the power. We got the speed. We're running wide open on a midsummer breeze. Fresh water.
It's time for Shake, Rattle, and Troll, a show for the serious fisherman, as well as the novice looking for tips from the pros. Shake, Rattle, and Troll is brought to you by Bill Luke Dodge Chrysler Jeep. Now, here's your host, saltwater fisherman and tournament pro, Don McDowell.
Good morning. It is Sunday morning, and you have the alternate bass in the box. You do not have Don McDowell. Big Bass Daddy himself is sitting right now somewhere in Missouri. I said it right. And he's enjoying the pleasures of a little bit of turkey hunting. Had a business trip that he had to attend to, and so JK is going to participate for the next 2 hours, and we have what probably I will call the most political show that we've ever been able to do. During this period of time, we're going to be interviewing former Fish and Wildlife Service agent James Beers. Now, Jim Beers had a varied career with Fish and Wildlife, and during his tenure with them, he was part and parcel of the disbursement of funds from the Pittman Robinson Act monies. And that's the taxes that we hunters and fishermen and outdoor enthusiasts pay whenever we are going to be purchasing items. The excise tax that we did, and this went back all the way to the 20s when it was enacted, the purpose of that was that we could fund wildlife organizations, we could fund habitat improvements, and we could basically fund taking care of wildlife. And the purpose behind all of this, of course, is to make sure that the wildlife is regenerated as a consuming public. The hunting and fishing community wanted to make sure that they would always be there. And Mr. Beers, at one point in time, was in charge of watching the disbursements. And if you go onto the internet and you read about Mr. Beers, he had a fascinating career. The most fascinating aspect was when he discovered what he found were unusual circumstances of the spending or lack of spending. The federal government is supposed to collect all this tax money and then redistribute it back to the states. That's the purpose behind it. His sole position at the time was to make sure that the funding was done appropriately. Well, during the late 90s, he found that there were some funds that were, I won't say misappropriated. He will. I won't. Not yet. And he questioned it, and he questioned it heavily. And in the Fish and Wildlife Services division, as he will tell you, he found that there was a massive influx of what I'll call, for lack of a better term, environmental wackos. People who believe that you, me, Bass Daddy, we shouldn't be out there in the woods. We should adore it. We should look at it, but we should never participate with it. We should never consume. And that wildlands are best left wild without any adoptive use by people. So he has agreed to come on the air. We'll see him in the second segment and chat with him about it. But his concern was that somewhere between $45 to $65 million was spent of Pittman Robinson money for the Endangered Species Act. Now, that to me is a concern. And Patrick, Don's brother Patrick, is sitting here with me. And Patrick, you and I have read the internet. What is your take on Mr. Beers?
I think people are scared of Mr. Beers. I think he knows the truth. He knows where the bodies are hidden. And he speaks freely of it. He knows the truth.
And I think also that the mainstream media studiously avoids him because, as we both know, typical media is left-wing, and they have a reluctance to show anything in the light that would be beneficial for hunters and fishermen to see because they themselves don't like what we do.
No. And the phrase came about last week, guerrilla media, and I believe that we're on the edge of becoming guerrilla media because the mainstream media doesn't care about Pittman Robinson money. They don't care about wolves. They don't care about what goes on in Washington behind closed doors. And Mr. Beers has been there. He's done that. He's got that T-shirt.
Yeah, the other thing, too, that I found fascinating is that as an employee of the federal government, he was told to stay home for 3 years.
And while getting paid.
While getting paid.
So he was furloughed.
Basically furloughed with one caveat, and that was that he could talk to nobody about Pittman Robinson money. That, to me, I find absolutely fascinating. And I, you know, his claim, and I've heard it in a couple of the speeches that he gave, you know, some of the comments that I've read online, and that was is that, you know, he had been threatened. There were people searching vehicles looking for him on the day he was supposed to report to work, and he didn't on advice from his attorney. They were actually searching vehicles. It's the only time in Fish and Wildlife that they search vehicles looking for somebody. And Mr. Beers was the body that they were looking for. He stayed home that day, and thank God he did, because he probably could have been defamed based on the actions that were going to happen. So he will be our guest at 7:17 this morning. I talked with him this week. He's eager to express his opinions, and I have found him to be a fascinating person. What we are going to do, too, is we're going to take a look. We know that endangered species is here to stay, or at least for a short period of time. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to drive all the way to California, actually the night before, And upon entering the state of California, I noticed that their flag was fairly prominent in a few spots. And if you look at the flag of California, it's the grizzly bear.
And Wait a minute. Grizzly bear doesn't exist in California.
It does not now. However, there were thousands who roamed the Sierra Nevadas and all up and down the coast of California back prior to the 1900s. And when the gold rushes came and they started moving them out or killing them off, they had that.
What, hang on. Why did they start killing them off again?
I don't know. I wasn't there. I know I look like I was there, but I was not there. That's the key. I'm not that old yet. But let's place ourselves right here now. I wonder why a state that has on its logo the grizzly bear, why they don't have a concerted effort to bring them back from this brink of extinction. You know, we know that there are some up in Wyoming, but that's not relevant. This is the state animal. This is on their state flag. Why don't we have a grizzly bear reintroduction through all of California? I suspect that we could probably put in mating pairs up and down all along the coast, and I think that that would be appropriate for a state that bears it on its flag.
Well, I think you're right, but JK, there's people that live in California.
Is that relevant?
Well, you have bears and people, and that's not a good mix. I mean, there's a gentleman here that is bear bite number 9.
I understand.
That does not want to be around another bear ever again.
I understand that.
But it wasn't a grizzly bear.
No, grizzly bear would not be a bite. This would be a fatality. And one of the things that I'm finding, the hypocrisy of the Center for Biological Diversity, the Sierra Club, the Defenders of Wildlife, is that they're trying to put an apex predator that can move hundreds of miles in a short period of time, which is wolves, and they're putting them into regions where hunting and fishing is it's a way of living, it's a religion, it's in rural communities, and they're putting them in areas where they want to rid the United States of any hunting activity. They want the natural balance. My question then is that we know that in California, why are they not pursuing grizzly bears in California when that's the state animal, it's on their state flag, and there's not one that's living in the state free and clear? It's a hypocrisy, and that's what we're trying to point out.
So what you want to do is bring all the Mexican gray wolves, put them in Phoenix, Scottsdale, Mesa, Tempe, Chandler, Goodyear.
Well, I think that if you talk to the people who are involved, the communities, the rural communities that have Mexican gray wolves currently, they don't want them. They've found out what they do. They've found out how it affects their ranching. The ranching community is the one that's affected the most. That, and of course, the fact that I as a hunter who waits once every 9 years to be able to have the opportunity to hunt, I think it's going to keep going up. It's going to be once every 10 years, every 12 years, every 15 years, until we get to the point where it's maybe a once in a lifetime. Now, we also know that if Defenders of Wildlife, Sierra Club, Lobos of the Southwest, and all of these organizations have their way, there would be no hunting. They want to have 3 metapacks in Arizona, Southern Utah, Southern Colorado, and New Mexico. Their dream is to have the massive reintroduction to bring back from the edge of extinction these...
Whoa.
Yes.
Extinction.
Yes.
That means there is no more.
Correct. There were seven when we started. There's 75 known now, plus the 190-some I think they have in captivity.
But Canada still has wolves.
Oh, that's not relevant, Patrick.
But you said there we're extinct. That means there are no more or very few.
There's very few Mexican gray wolves. And here is the key that these
organizations... But they're still wolves, JK.
I understand. They want them brought back not only here, they want them universally. I'm fascinated by the logic that goes and the holes in the logic as you progress forward. But they want to recover a single subspecies, which is the Mexican gray wolf, and they want to do it specifically in Arizona, New Mexico, Southern Colorado, which represents maybe 10% to 20% of its historic range. The fact that it is called a Mexican gray wolf is for a reason. That's where it originated from, according to theory. That's what we're hearing right now. The theoretical aspects of where their range was. My fascination with the fact is that why would you try and recover a whole species in a small
subspecies
in a small geographic area when you have a whole country
a whole country that is reluctant to do so and has shown absolutely no ability to do so. Now, we know that there's been a few transplants of these Mexican gray wolves in Mexico. The life expectancy when they start and they put them in there is probably about 3 months. They have found them poisoned. They have found them shot. We also know that politically, they don't have any scientists who want to go up against the drug cartels in the mountainous regions of Mexico, and that's why they're not doing it. So the hypocrisy is there. In the next segment, we're going to be talking with Mr. Beers. We look forward to it. And this is JK, and
I'm Patrick.
That's what I do. Backsliding, hiding away from the truth until the tears run. Oh, here comes one. I'm dropped by her mama, stoned out of my mind, just to hear that it's over from her.
Untangling your fishing line when you should be fishing? Have you been injured by loose treble or single hooks? If you answered yes, then you need to get the Fish Clipper. The Fish Clipper is the first safety clip product that secures your fishing tackle to your fishing rod. The Fish Clipper is removable, durable, and field tested for approval. Protect your children, yourself, and pets, and keep your fishing rods tangle free. See our video at fishclipper.com, and I'll promise you'll get hooked on the Fish Clipper. Available at Fisherman's Choice, Liar's Corner, and The Hookup. Happy fishing, y'all.
When fishing for success, why fish with an imitator? Fish with the best. Rico. I'm Chris Ritchie, the U.S. Open AAA champion, and that is my recipe for success. LobinaLures.com.
Hey, yo, Jimmy, what's the matter with you? You're not skippy fishing. Well, here's what we're going to do for you, buddy. Forget about them. Get them skippy fish, okay? A skippy fish, this thing's a unique soft plastic jerk bait with an active whale tail and a thin body design that works for you as soon as it hits the water. It's unbelievable. These skippy fish lures look and act and taste like a real fish, huh? Like the calamar, huh? It's a perfect blend of scent, too. The fish just pound and give you that extra edge, like that little bit of anisette, huh? You throw them as a jerk bait, you skip them under the docks, the trees. You drop shot them, Carolina rig them, stick them on a jig head minke, you got yourself a beautiful swim bait, huh? 2, 4, and 6-inch styles in a variety of the tournament-proven colors, you know, that give you the edge. Hey, you can buy them online at skippyfish.com or ask for them by name at your local tackle dealer. Hey, pal, one more time, skippyfish.com. Your mother would approve.
At Ardent, made in the USA is more than a point of difference. Made in the USA means pride in our craftsmanship, pride in our products, and pride in our ability to deliver every angler a line of high-quality, high-performance fishing reels and accessories that are truly second to none. We are Ardent Reels and proud to be made in the USA. Buy American, buy Ardent. Available at Cabela's and Bass Pro Shop.
If you're a serious angler, or if losing a fish during a tournament could cost you thousands of dollars, then you need to have the best equipment available to compete. A fishing rod will make the difference in catching the fish or never sensing that the fish had picked up and dropped your bait. As all saltwater anglers know, a quality-built rod is the only way to successfully land that sport fish of a lifetime. Rim Country Custom Rods in Payson, Arizona builds all types of fishing rods for serious and professional anglers. Whether you fish saltwater or freshwater, Rim Country Custom Rods can build a custom rod for an angler and his specific style of fishing. They also do all kinds of fishing rod repairs, from guide replacement to broken reel seats. Call James Guggenauer of Rim Country Custom Rods for a free quote, or if you have any questions related to fishing rods. Rim Country Custom Rods can be reached at 480-495-1351. 480-495-1351. Rim Country Custom Rods for serious and professional anglers. 480-495-1351.
Every day, thousands of sportsmen take to the field to enjoy nature and the great outdoors. Statistics show that an overwhelming majority of these hunters and fishermen consistently follow the game and fish rules. Still, there are a few bad boys out there that break the law and give our sport a bad name. I'm Officer Kenny D. with the Arizona Game and Fish Department's Operation Game Thief program. If you are one of the bad boys who can't follow the rules, make no mistake about it. We're coming for you.
This segment of Shake, Rattle, and Troll is brought to you by True Turn Hooks, the hook that strikes back.
Time and the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind.
All right, we're coming back in, and we've got two editions. One of our guests in studio this morning is Pete Similero. Good morning, Pete.
Morning, Johnny.
How are you?
Oh, I'm awake.
Good. I see my wake-up call worked. Also online with us this morning, we have Mr. James Beers. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. I've read, obviously, a bunch of the articles, and we know the results that we've seen over the period of time. The biggest question that I have, and I know that it's most interesting here for us here in Arizona, is we know that there is a massive push to put big numbers of Mexican gray wolves on the ground. They're wanting to change it from the experimental 10J status to endangered species status, and they want them all across the state instead of the limited range that we have now. One of the things that I have said in the past is, and I noted that you said it as well, is that the groundswell of lack of support has to come from those communities that have them and that are most affected. We know the urban people who are, shall we say, Disneyfied, they want to see them all over the place as long as it's not in their backyard. And your express comments have always been that if you start from the groundswell of support and have only the local communities, the counties, those areas most affected, and how they can perhaps prevent the massive inclusion of Mexican gray wolves coming in. And I'm going to let you take over at that.
Well, it's kind of interesting to me that you're calling me from Arizona to talk about this subject, because Arizona and New Mexico, back in 2004, there was a coalition, it's still there, of Arizona-New Mexico counties, really formed around, between the two states and along the border, formed around the concept of what do we, who are putting up with these wolves, what can we do together? So you had this unique in American society today, a group of counties from two states, acting in one sense like they were not a state, if you will, but a large community that was going to try to solve their own problems, because neither of their states would stand up for them.
Correct.
So that put aside now, and we see what's happened with wolves since 2004 when I came down there to get that award and spoke to a bunch of people down there. We see that the wolves have greatly increased in the north and around the Great Lakes, and people are all complaining in the cities, like you say, that, oh, they're going to kill the alpha wolves. This pack has got integrity. They shouldn't be able to trap them. They shouldn't be able to do this to them. And they're taking too many, blah, 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 all this stuff. And they also the stuff about, well, maybe, which we see more and more each day now, maybe they shouldn't have cattle out there where the wolves are. Maybe they shouldn't have sheep. Well, you know, maybe they shouldn't own dogs out there. Well, they should learn to keep their kids in out there in wolf country. And with that said, we see that Utah and Colorado are still without wolves, and you guys have had them for a while and have been fighting about it, and it's not going too well. So they've got this big push on right now in the north to say, well, we're going to return management of these wolves to the state. Aren't we good people? And aren't you lucky? So the state fish and game departments have got to pick up the costs of not only compensation, but reporting on these wolves, trying to count them, which is all but impossible, and go through court cases and answer all of the complaints from their urban areas and all of this about the wolves. It's an enormous burden on the state with no real return, other than for everybody to say, oh, look, what a good job. The federal government put these things here. It's once again like it was before Columbus arrived. And the state takes care of it. We return management. They've got well, they don't. They don't have management at all. But that said, you've got that big middle area, Colorado and Utah, that they want to get the wolves into so that they can link up with Arizona and New Mexico. And the way you do that is to stuff a lot more in a lot broader area in Arizona and New Mexico. That's what they're up to. just like they're cooperatively working with Mexico right now to release some wolves in Mexico. Aren't we wonderful? We're going broke up here, and we're sending people down there and money down to Mexico with our folks to put wolves just south of the Big Bend down there where they're not going to have much food, and the people, despite all of the highfalutin stuff about how the rural Mexicans love wolves, do not love wolves. And the wolves are going to move up into Texas, just like the Arizona-New Mexico wolf movement is intended to move up into Utah and Colorado and sort of take over the whole West as they kind of push into Oregon now in Washington. And they've been showing up, roaming into Northern California. And from all of those states, they're going to tumble out into the Black Hills. They're going to tumble into the Sand Hills, western Kansas, and they're going to learn, just like coyotes did,
how to survive.
To live closer and closer to people. Listen to this nonsense of, oh, they never lived here, they aren't going to move there. That's crazy. They're just like your dog in your house. They'll do what they got to do as their numbers increase.
Hey, Jim, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
One of the things we know now is that, of course, these are extremely mobile animals that can go hundreds of miles when they have face that inclination, whether it's food or searching for a mate. These are extremely mobile animals. When you talked to me the other day, we mentioned the fact that the county governments need to band together very strongly. We have to have a strong county board of supervisors. Then we have to have a whole group of counties that agree to it. And from those counties, we have to have the state. Now, in 2004, we were under what I believe was the Janet Napolitano regime, who was a strong Democrat, an advocate of, shall we say, unsecure borders in Arizona and bringing in all the wildlife, and the environmentalists absolutely adored her. We've got Governor Jan Brewer now, who is staunchly opposed to any more massive reintroductions and who is, quite frankly, a conservative Republican. Do you think we have an opportunity, if we base our strong support and having the rejection of changing it from a 10J status to endangered species?
You bet I do. And the way to do that is not to go to the 10J meetings and follow all of the little nooks and crannies that they keep putting in your way, along, because they're working, the federal government's working hand in hand with the Humane Society, Center for Biological Diversity, and most of the state fish and game departments, and they're not working in your best interest. And I would take one little exception with one word you use, which we need unified county opposition. I think what you need, what New Mexico needs, and what every state that's facing this issue needs, is authority from the state to recognize county authority or jurisdiction over controlling canids within the county. Now, canids includes coyotes, wolves, dogs, whatever, that are problem animals. And let the voters within the county, whether they all want to do it or a majority want to do it, let them have the authority, if they want to exercise it, of controlling the presence, the behavior, the impacts of wolves within their jurisdiction. I often use the example of deer hunting in the state of Virginia, where I lived for quite a few years when I worked in Washington. And the counties are all different. I mean, you look at the deer hunting map there, and it's a riot of colors. And one county allows dogs, another one doesn't. One county allows shotguns with buckshot, another one not. Another one says you can have a 4-week season, another one says a 3-day season. One says you can take a deer a day, the other says only one a year. And all of this stuff. But what it does, once you get familiar with it, it allows the local county or local communities to make decisions about the numbers of deer and the impacts of deer and the way they're hunted within the county. For instance, a county that for years near the Chesapeake Bay might be a very, very thick wooded county, and they've used dogs since the Civil War. And you get a lot of retirees moving in there, and everybody looks around and says, you know, I don't like seeing those dogs run through my yard after these deer and these guys standing along the road, blah, 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 blah. And then they can get it changed. They can say, well, no longer in our county will we use dogs. The same with rifles.
So they basically they have that ability on a county-by-county basis. Jim, can you hang on for in the next segment? We've got to take a break, pay some of our sponsors, but I want to get into this more.
Well, I've heard my name a few times in your phone book.
Hello.
And I've seen it on signs where the
NBC News Radio, I'm Scott Walterman. Cold weather coming to the upper Midwest and Northeast. NBC meteorologist Dylan Dreyer says Chicago should feel it first.
It's really cold in the morning. Tomorrow we're only topping out around 45 degrees after starting off at 27 tomorrow morning.
Off the coast of Mexico, Tropical Storm Raymond could bring heavy rain and flooding. It could become a hurricane in the next 48 hours. President Obama will be talking about the rollout of healthcare.gov tomorrow. He told staff last week they have to own up to the poor startup of the healthcare program. This morning on Meet the Press, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew said,
I think that there's no one more frustrated than the president at the difficulty in the website.
The World Series is all set. The Boston Red Sox will face off against the St. Louis Cardinals. First game is set for Wednesday at Fenway. This is NBC News Radio.
Hi, everybody. Jim Howell from the KFX Weather Center. Working our way through a picture-perfect October weekend. Daytime highs mid-80s. Overnight lows upper 50s here in town, upper 40s in our cooler valley spots. And we stay mid-80s the first of the week. Jim Howell, Independent Talk 1100 KFX.
Currently, in downtown Phoenix, it's 60 degrees.
Grand Avenue Mini Storage, located at 3636 Grand Avenue in Phoenix, is your place for all your storage needs. They offer a secure storage facility with on-premise management 24/7, and they have over 30 years of storage excellence. They offer secure and lighted storage, surveillance cameras, computerized gates, unit sizes 4x4 all the way to 25x32, with wide aisles, disc locks, and insurance available. Commercial deliveries are also welcome at Grand Avenue Mini Storage. Give them a call today, 480-447-1477. Once again, that's Grand Avenue Mini Storage, 480-447-1477. And don't forget, Grand Avenue Mini Storage has the cleanest unisex restroom in the valley.
Fast Track Designs is your one-stop shop when you need a logo designed, recreated, or have an existing or new logo that needs to be screen printed, embroidered, or wrapped on a vehicle. Call Fast Track Designs at 623-780-1168. You think it, they print it. From t-shirts to business cards, signage to promotional products, banners to vehicle wraps, Fast Track Design is your one-stop shop for all your printing needs. 623-780-1168. Call Fast Track Designs right now for a great deal. 623-780-1168. You think it, they print it. Fast Track Designs.
Man, it's hot in here. When your home air conditioner breaks down, wouldn't you like to have a friend in the business? Well, now you do. Bill Ruley at Ruley Air is your go-to guy for home heating and cooling service and repairs. Ruley Air will give you the prompt, courteous service and discounted pricing you would expect from a friend. Bill Ruley at Ruley Air, 602-315-8545. Ruley Air, your friend in the business, 602-315-8545. Ruley Air, 602-315-8545.
Look out. Look out, Mountain Outdoors. How's your firearm for hunting, self-protection, home defense, tactical, or just for plinking? We have the best prices on new and pre-owned firearms, ammunition, new and consignment sporting equipment. Bring in your good usable sporting equipment, and we'll move it for you. Clean out the garage and closets. Hunting season is here. Arizona native Joe Nacha has hunted the world. He offers tips and answers questions on how to bag the big ones. Lookout Mountain Outdoors, two blocks north of Bell on Cave Creek Road. Stop by and visit Lookout Mountain Outdoors, 602-795-HUNT.
This segment brought to you by Roadrunner Reality Shad Buffet Rigs. Don't throw them a sandwich, throw them a buffet.
Fire burns deep inside. I never learned from all her lies.
Oh, we're back at it. Jim, are you still with us?
Yeah.
All right. One of the things that we have been toying with here in Arizona, and this is a question that you specifically might have a good response to. We know that the animals that we currently have are labeled 10J, non-essential, experimental. And they want a change to basically have anything that gets out of that area become endangered species. Also, they want to have the whole of the state declared as an endangered species. Our thought here as a rebuttal to that proposition is to have the whole state declared as a 10J non-essential experimental with a very limited number of the 100 that we agreed to more than 15 years ago. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that you have to do that, I think, simultaneously with looking carefully at the authority, that your elected county officials have got in the various counties, and the way they word the sheriff's authority and the way that they word the our county superintendent or county commissioner's authority, and you've got to establish that they're going to have a say in this legally within the county, within the state, and that the state then does or does not do what you just talked about, making the whole area a 10J area, or simply puts their foot down, and you approach the federal government exactly like they put the wolves in there to begin with raw political power. You're not going to get anywhere with I'm being very blunt about this. I don't think you're going to get anywhere with playing their games with their wording of, oh, that's essential, but we've got these targets and we've got the area here, and when they get out, we're going to make them endangered over there. And they just keep changing that and sitting down with the academics that they get research from, and those evil, and that's the right word, lobbyists in Washington that want them in there at all costs. You've got to have a strong political opposition to a strong political force. Otherwise, it's just going to continue like it has all over the country, that they just keep rolling over this state, rolling over that state over there, and rolling over the cattlemen, and rolling over the elk hunters and the moose hunters, and lying through their teeth, and the state backing them up, state bureaucrats backing them up. But I think it's essential, I really do, that the state have a strong political base, if you will, to say, look, our elected local officials, our county commissioners and sheriffs in these 8 counties or 18 counties want to control any wolves that are in here, and if you put them in here, they're authorized to do whatever they need to do, just like they do with problem dogs. They're going to pick them up, and you don't get them back, whoever owns them, unless you come in within 3 days to claim them, and then you've got to pay a fine, even if you're a federal government. You've got to pay for their upkeep, and they're going to be marked in such a way that they will be killed the next time they're doing what they were picked up for right now. There's no difference between a wolf in your yard and a little pack of pit bulls out there that you don't know where they came from. They're a danger to people. They're a danger to your animals, your dog, your livestock. They're a danger to game animals. And you're going to say that you're going to kill them the next time that happens, and they're authorized, the counties are authorized to delegate that out. And you're also going to have within your counties the authority for the county commissioners, the sheriff, to say, look, you've got wolves on that property over here, even if it's the federal government's Forest Service property. The only place where they can't do that is Yellowstone. All these other places, the federal government is a landowner, just like everybody else. The fact that they've parlayed this business about, well, we don't pay taxes, so we're so special, we're like Ted Turner or something, is nonsense to let them get away with that. If you're going to control wolves and you say, look, we've had problems in this county with wolves in yards and killing cattle, and they're coming out of your place over there, and we want you to control those wolves in there, or we're going to come in and do it for you. And if the person that has that property won't let this county on there, the county just forces their way in, does the control work, just like they would with wild dogs or weeds. The county can go in there and control them and then say, look, we're billing you for it, and if you don't pay it, we're putting a lien on this property. Now, that's the kind of political power that's got to be in place if you're going to stand up to them and say, listen, we're not just out here like a bunch of little baby birds with our mouth open waiting for some federal buzzard to come over and stuff something in it.
You know, that's a good analogy, and I think that if we take a vote, obviously you know that the most liberal areas are always going to be urban dwellers. They have absolutely no concept of what really goes on in the land because they spend their lives sitting in cities. We also know that the Humane Society, the Center for Biological Diversity, and the Sierra Club are extremely wealthy organizations that can paint any picture that they want to that is not based in reality. And they always, their main claim to fame is, quote, one, a healthy ecosystem, and number two, a majority of the public wants to see more wolves. He who phrases the question wins the debate.
Yep.
I think that from what you're saying, if we say there's 12 counties in Arizona, and out of the 12 counties, Maricopa
as a good example, which is the urban legend here. If Maricopa and, say, Coconino say they don't want to, they want to have wolves, and all the rest of the state says they don't, then we're going to have to transplant them only or have the experimental area in Maricopa County. Does that sound right?
That's correct. When they step into the county where they say, look, we've had a lot of problems here. We don't want any more elk killed and are being killed. We want to protect our cattle. We don't want our kids sitting in cages waiting for school buses. So when we see them doing that, these wolves, we're gonna take measures just like we would with any other wild dog. We're going to let you shoot coyotes at any time you see them with a problem 24/7. But dogs that are running loose and or wolf-like animals, they get picked up. And if these other counties, that whatever your urban counties are, they can exercise their authority and have wolves there. That's fine. That's like the federal government wants them in Yellowstone, so all the tourists can go out there and whatever.
By the way, you and I talked about this too, and that is that Yellowstone was such a unique population of wildlife, and I've seen documentaries now where they claim that the Yellowstone elk herd is, quote, in a biologically balanced, in a more what did they call it? It was a healthy herd now. And my question is, how do you go from in the environmental impact statement, the FEIS, which the federal government, Fish and Wildlife Services, put out, they claim that no less than 5% nor more than 30% of the Yellowstone herd would become food for the gray wolves. We both know that over 80% of that herd has been decimated already, and it's going to go down because those mature animals that have lived are now getting to the point where they're in the non-calving era. They're too old. A lot
That's
of those cows
exactly
are getting
right.
way too old.
Those were lies to begin with, and anybody that accepts listening to these lies about – they would have said the same thing if there was only two elk left in there. They'd say, oh, my gosh, the songbirds – have just loved the willows along the streams, and now suddenly there's shade for the trout, and it's just, they don't want anybody in there catching those trout, but all of a sudden they're just, oh, we're going to have shade for the trout and all this. It's nonsense, and they would say that stuff and generate whatever kind of propaganda is needed. These people, honest to God, and I guess I'm just a nasty person for saying this, they're no different than a propagandist for the Stalin people or for Hitler or the rest of them. Whatever's going on, they're going to spin it so that it makes everybody say, well, gosh, the people in charge are doing the best they can, and this is certainly better than it used to be, isn't it? They're spinning all this stuff, and it's lies. It's just plain lies, and I'm not going to – for a long time, you try to be polite, and you say, well, you know, they just misinformation. We'll explain it to them, you know, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, you could look at the collapse of the Lolo herd up, elk herd up in Idaho.
Yeah.
And you could look at the Yellowstone herd and see what's happened. Just like you can look at Minnesota moose. They just closed the Minnesota moose season probably forever. For the last 20 years, as the number on the graph of wolves go up and up and up and up, the moose population goes down and down and down. Now we can't even hunt them anymore here. And it used to be a very valuable license, once in a lifetime, and all this kind of stuff. And they're gone. And they're still, the bureaucrats are still getting money here in Minnesota from the federal government and from the state, the both of which are broke, to go out there and go out there and put tags and collars and satellite monitor and run big articles in the paper. Just read one the other day. Oh, this is because of global warming.
And, that's it. Global warming has taken out the moose. Uh-huh.
The moose have got a lot of ticks on them. And, you know, there's still a lot more that we got to do research on because all of the people they hire in the agencies, the federal and state agencies anymore, along with all the other anti-hunting and that kind of stuff, they is just in their genes right from the beginning. I guess they're born with it. The idea that, well, predation is just never that serious, and it's wonderful, it's natural. That's what went on before Columbus got here. That must be good. And they will never, ever admit to it or look at it honestly. I mean, you look at all these articles and research papers and everything else, and the perspective is there right from the first word. That, well, we of course we all know that, you know, wolves don't do this or mountain lions don't do that.
Yeah, we know what they do. James, we've got to take another break. Can you hang on for a portion of one more segment for us?
Sure.
I appreciate it. I'm John Colazar.
Pete Similero.
Patrick.
come again. Catch us if you can.
Visit and stay at Arizona's Five Diamond RV Resort at beautiful Lake Pleasant. The Pleasant Harbor RV Resort and Marina features 254 full-service fenced RV sites, 60 campsites with power, water, cabana covers, and barbecues, virtually unlimited dry camping opportunities. Registered guests enjoy numerous amenities, including a swimming pool and spa. Come for the day, week, month, or longer. Plan to spend your next special occasion with us. Whether RVing, boating, planning a birthday, wedding, company picnic, or family reunion, our venue is able to accommodate activity. Take advantage of the full-service marina with two launch ramps, boat rentals, kayaking, stand-up paddling, guided fishing trips, and more are available. Experience AZ at its finest, the Five Diamond RV Resort and Marina destination, the Pleasant Harbor RV Resort and Marina. Visit our website, pleasantharbor.com, or call for reservations, 800-475-3272. That's 800-475-3272.
Ever heard the phrase, don't move a muscle? Now it's the law. Well, it's the prime boating season, and the Arizona Game and Fish Department reminds everyone that invasive quagga mussels can attach themselves to your boat, and you can spread them to other waters if you don't take certain precautions. If you're boating at Havasu, Pleasant, Mojave, or Mead, help stop the spread of these destructive mussels by pulling your plug and cleaning, draining, and drying your entire boat after each outing. It's not only the law, it's the right thing to do. Visit azgfd.gov for more information.
Look out! Look out, Mountain Outdoors. How's your firearm for hunting, self-protection, home defense, tactical, or just for plinking? We have the best prices on new and pre-owned firearms, ammunition, new and consignment sporting equipment. Bring in your good usable sporting equipment, and we'll move it for you. Clean out the garage and closets. Hunting season is here. Arizona native Joe Nacha has hunted the world. He offers tips and answers questions on how to bag the big ones. Lookout Mountain Outdoors, two blocks north of Bell on Cave Creek Road. Stop by and visit Lookout Mountain Outdoors, 602-795-HUNT.
Arden Reels is carving out a whole new category in the tackle industry, reel care. Protect your fishing dollar investment and extend the performance and life of your reels and line with Arden Reel Butter, Reel Grease, Reel Oil, Bearing Lube, and Line Butter Conditioner. Ask for us by name. We are Arden Reels and proud to be made in the USA. By American, by Arden. Available at Cabela's and Bass Pro Shops.
At Bill Luke Chrysler Jeep and Dodge, 26 years after Dodge produced the first minivan, the legacy that lives on in Grand Caravan is a force to be reckoned with. As Grand Caravan drivers get accustomed to the comfort, function, and style, any thought of owning another vehicle just evaporates. Grand Caravan is the best family vehicle ever. Raising your expectations is really what Grand Caravan does best. You'll be spoiled for any other vehicle. Visit the Bill Luke 5-star facility at I-17 and West Camelback Road and test drive the new Dodge Caravan. Experience the thrill of the ride and the Luke family values, serving our community for over 80 years of customer commitment, fair and honest value, and sincere service. Bill Luke Chrysler Jeep and Dodge, I-17 and West Camelback Road since 1927.
This segment of Shake, Rattle, and Troll is brought to you by Mr. Crappie's Slab Daddy Supper Rigs. We all live for the thump.
All right, we're back. This is John Colazar with Pete Simulero, Patrick McDowell, and former and retired Fish and Wildlife Service personnel, James Beers. James, thank you for taking so much time with us this morning. Pete, you have a question for Jim.
Jim, one of the things I heard you say, and I'm really intrigued by it, is that the county involvement is critical in this. Having the local people that are affected by these wolves have a say in what's done. And to me, that's the missing component in this whole thing, is the fact that you have our urban cities like Tucson and Phoenix dictating to the rest of the state, and of course the environmentalists and the extremists playing to those cities in order to drag them along and create some this aura of support for the wolf. Well, it's great to support something when it's in somebody else's backyard. You don't care, really.
Just real quickly, that's exactly how they get them into Washington. Seattle wants them. They get them into Oregon. Portland wants them. They get them into Montana, and Billings and Missoula want them. In Minnesota, the Twin Cities want them. Over in Michigan, it's Grand Rapids that wants them. It's going on all over the country.
Well, for me, that's the very thing that we have to avoid. We have to have our local people involved in this process. And to me, it seems like if we created a 10J state, basically making them non-essential experimental, and then with a component of the counties involved, working with the agencies through, we have a natural resource council here that's just getting off its ground and off the ground, and it involves all of our state agencies, and they're working with the counties. This could be a natural place for us to exercise some control and direction for a program that could benefit everybody and keep the wolf numbers in check and management where we can accept it.
I think you're 100% right, but you got to have that local control element put together and working, because if you're just working on the other end of it while you're tinkering with the county end of it, they're going to run over you just like the Germans going into Russia. I mean, just wham, bam, and all of a sudden there you are.
Jim, one of the things I was curious about, and I obviously you had to take a 3-year sabbatical. Basically, you were told to stay home, get paid for 3 years, shut your mouth, don't say a word to anybody.
Yeah, that's correct. When all that happened, I mean, a lot of things stunned me, like the state game and fish directors never asked for the money, the millions of dollars stolen from their programs to be replaced.
Were they afraid to ask for it back?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they were going to. What are they going to do about future grants for endangered species or a job that might come available if they want or an after-retirement position that they can give them to give them a little work to do? And, you know, what about Bass Pro picking them up if they were antagonizing all the federal people? Yeah, I mean, you're darn right they were afraid. And their organization was run by a retired chief of the Forest Service, and you don't get to be chief of the Forest Service in that by standing out. And I'm not knocking the guy. Just saying the guys that they put in charge for their influence are the same guys who get where they get in the federal government and other big jobs by getting along with everybody and schmoozing everybody and not ticking anybody off. But that the thing that I think people, I'd like to just mention to your listeners, I was just stunned. After they had sent me home for 10 months and my lawyer said, look, they want to give you a big cash settlement. I think we got to do this. This is the only way out of this. And I talked to my wife. She said, yeah, we'll do it. I come in to sit down with this, and they offered me 3 large payments of money over and above my salary and my retirement and everything. And they were going to give it to me in 1-year installments. And I had to sign a piece of paper. Now, that money that I was getting was your tax money. That had nothing to do with wildlife or anything else. It was just pure money out of the Treasury. They give it to me in 3 installments saying, and I had to sign a piece of paper that if I speak or write anything, one word, about the circumstances of my separation from the federal government, I would immediately have to repay all of it. So for 3 years, that was what was in there, I could not say or write a word about this. Now think about this. Aside from me saying, well, that's not right and all this stuff, you guys, I'm talking about elk hunters and fishermen and ranchers and dog owners and the rest of you that said, might have said, you know, what are they doing in there? What happened to that guy that testified about all that money they stole? They bribed me with your tax money to not say a word to the newspaper, to any interested group, not that they were interested, the Ducks Unlimited, that they all ran for cover, the Cattlemen's Association, the Dog Owners Association, anybody that was interested in, what's the deal here? Did they really steal money? How come the states didn't ask for it back? I never got to answer those questions because they all figured that by 3 years, you know, 3 years later, nobody would remember this. It'd be like, why did we invade Kuwait or something? Like, who cares?
It's not news anymore if it's after the fact so far.
Exactly. But, I mean, I was just absolutely appalled at that. And that's going on right now, I'm sure. You know, we don't want you to say anything. We in the government, come here, we're going to give you all this money, and if you say anything about this for 3 years, Buster, we're going to get you.
Now, that was back in...
It's crazy.
That was back in 98, 99, and 2000,
exactly.
Right?
Okay. Exactly, yeah.
What are you doing these days?
I write and speak. I go around the country a lot speaking, and I write, and I have a lot of people call me and write me and ask me for help, and I give them all the help I can. And
yeah, Pete and I were up in Springerville this in August when you were up there giving your talk. Both of us were in attendance on that. And we also watched, we didn't realize it at the time, but we were part of the David Spady film, Wolves in Government Clothing.
Yep.
You watched that, correct?
Yes, I did. He sent me a copy of it here about a week ago, and I watched it. And wrote him a real nice little email telling him I thought it was great. And pretty good job on it. So.
Well, I wish you continued success in what you're doing, James. And obviously, I would love to chat with you on a frequent basis as this, and I'll call it what it is. It's a war. We're going to go to war on wolves, and we're going to go to wolves on in Arizona. Not only in Arizona, but New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado, because I think we're the last bastion that might be able to dig our heels in and say no.
Yep, that's correct.
Jim,
I wish you all the luck in the world.
Jim, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We all do, and thank you so much.
You bet. You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, Pete. That was James Beers.
Well, I always appreciate his frankness. In this age of political correctness, when things are often left unsaid or manipulated and said in a different way, I appreciate the fact that Jim called it like he saw it. And we know how big that problem was. We know how that problem still is, how big it is. And I just appreciate the fact that he's out there. People think that he's a radical. Well, I'm a radical right along with him because I fear a government that doesn't tell me the truth and manipulates things behind the scene and works with other organizations clandestinely to shape our future. That's not right. That's not American. That's not the public process.
You know, and part of it, too, is yes, he accepted staying where he was and not saying a word for 3 years. But if he hadn't accepted that, they would have ruined him. They would have trapped him. They would have made it so that he, who paid all of his all those years, I mean, he was with the Fish and Wildlife Service for over 25 years. He was right at the age of retirement. He would have lost everything. So it wasn't a matter of him just taking extra gain. He would have lost everything if he hadn't bought what they put down on paper for him.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
You know, and it's a sad state of affairs when we find that the infiltration into Fish and Wildlife is more by people who have the disconnect and want to see no human. You know, I remember one of the commissioners who we disagreed with on many occasions, Jennifer Martin, who always said utility fosters use. And that was her big claim to fame. And I'll always remember that from her. And that was basically saying is that if you have the opportunity on the land for people to recreate, whether it be hunting, whether it be horseback riding, whether it be quad riding, in limited sets where everybody can get along, that's the best use of this resource that we have in the United States. And these are public lands that we've paid for forever. What we have now is less than 10% of the population trying to tell all of us that we cannot do what we want to do on land that we've already paid for.
Understood.
So my question is, what do we do now?
I think that Pete and certainly Jim Beers and myself are all on the same page in that, and that is that each of the county governments needs to stand tall. They need to really do that, and I don't care what Maricopa County does, and I don't care what Pima County does. We'll put them in Pima County, right in Congressman Grijalva's backyard, and let him see how he likes having wolves there.
You know, Johnny, one of the things that I think is an important component of all this is the fact we've talked about the state wolf management plan, the fact that the state develops its own, and I know that's in the works. But I think also what I've heard here this morning and what I really agree with is the fact that the political side of that has to be involved. We need the counties involved. We need direction from our governor.
Yep.
We need participation so that we can make it a management plan that works for the wolves and, more importantly, works for everybody that's here.
All right. Today, for roll call, we are fortunate or unfortunate. I consider it unfortunate that we have one name, but we still have a name. Army Staff Sergeant Patrick H. Quinn died October 13, 2013, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. He was 26 years old of Quarryville, Pennsylvania, assigned to the 3rd Battalion, 10th Special Forces out of Fort Carson, Colorado. He died in Patika Province, Afghanistan, of injuries caused by small arms fire. One too many, but it is one for the week.
Come on, brother, I'm taking you home. Come on, brother, I'm taking you home. Come on, brother, I'm taking you home. Come on, brother, I'm taking you
You're listening to Independent Talk, 1100 KFM.